There's the name Discovery. She has carried us into the future. And it will be our privilege to make that future bright.
Let's see how this plays out, shall we?
Transfer complete.
Hello, and welcome to Subspace Transmissions, the podcast where two Trek fans step into the arena and tackle the best, worst, weirdest, wildest, and everything in between that Star Trek has to offer. I'm Cam Smith, and joining me on the bridge,
this is Tyler Orton, looking forward to streaming all of his Star Trek content on Quibi one of these days.
What is
Cam,
this?
Are you on Quibi?
I am not on Quibi. I'm too old.
Okay.
I'm still setting up my Snapchat account.
Fair enough. You're not on TikTok?
No, I am not.
What about Vine? Are you a Vine guy?
Sure. V is in Vine. There's my Twitter.
There you go.
There's my Twitter sign out for this week.
Guys, this is an episode. We can call it right now. Our shortest episode yet. Just to go off on that high note.
Vine length.
Vine length. Cam. For all those who have not already turned off the podcast, what is the conundrum this week?
We are going to talk about the current state of Trek. This is our sort of annual get-together where we take the temperature of the franchise. We've been doing these since, June 10th, 2015. So
wow.
It's been several years, and every year we like to make lots of predictions that all prove incorrect.
Cam, what were some of the fun predictions we might have been talking about 5 years ago?
Well, in the first one we ever did, we talked about how the lack of HD transfers for DS9 and Voyager would really seriously harm their legacy as shows people would watch.
Well, at least we got what we left behind, and there's a little bit of HD in there, so I'm glad that they were listening to us for that particular podcast, and we inspired a little bit of HD.
And I don't know if you noticed this year, Tyler, though, that the 25th anniversary of Voyager, no one mentioned it because they didn't have HD transfers.
Oh, that's right. That is
That
is true.
There's
a little bit, there's totally HD for TOS, Deep Space Nine, Enterprise,
animated.
And TNG, animated.
Yeah.
Nothing for Voyager. Discovery, Picard, all in HD. Voyager is the one franchise without any sort of HD transfer at all. That's a bummer.
I mean, I guess you have those fan-made ones that they've done, but yeah, nothing official for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, well, the fan-made things, it's not an HD transfer, though. It's upscale AI sort of software. So it's,
right.
Which, you know, like, I've looked at the stuff. I think it's at a point where it's good enough where I'd happily watch that over the SD transfers that we get on the DVDs at this point or whatever is on Netflix, which the standard def stuff, especially on Deep Space Nine, is pretty brutal. Like, I'm so bummed that we don't have even a better standard def transfer than what we've got right now.
I mean, let me tell you, as the guy who does the artwork for each episode of this podcast, doing screen caps for DS9 is a nightmare because so many of the sets are dark, and dark with a bad standard transfer is just, they make such ugly images.
That's just brutal. That's just brutal. Yeah. But Cam, beyond that, we don't have any HD news to share. But why don't we tackle this project by project, franchise by franchise? We say this every single year since we started doing this 5 years ago. Like, there's never been more content coming down the pike than ever before. Let's jump over to this one, though. Because I think this is what's coming up next. I really do believe that Star Trek Lower Decks is going to be the next bit of Star Trek content that we get. We've been getting more news stories in recent weeks. Just a little bit more, you know, details on what the series might entail. A few more stills from the animated show, the adult comedy, you know, animated show that's going to be coming out. CTV Sci-Fi, the science fiction channel here in Canada. They just signed a licensing deal, so it's going to be airing here on cable in Canada, as well as our streaming service, Crave. So I think that tells us that Lower Decks seems imminent. I'd be surprised if we're not getting a little bit of Lower Decks by September.
So you think Lower Decks is going to come out before Discovery?
We've heard nothing from Discovery, and it's just noticeable that the fact that there's news coming out about Lower Decks and no news coming about Discovery. So I think we can, you know, make a wise deduction that Lower Decks is up next here.
Yeah, I mean, I guess we'll walk back on that when Discovery drops first. But
for our now, predictions are always wrong.
That's right. So. But yeah, we've seen a bunch of artwork came out, as well as teases that we may see some TNG characters pop up on the show at some point down the road. So they definitely have gone into kind of that teasing mode of getting fans excited. And I do think Lower Decks is going to have to work harder than some of the other shows, and that it doesn't seem, at least from what I've tended to notice, the groundswell of enthusiasm for that show versus Discovery, Picard, Strange New Worlds.
You know, a lot of people are like, well, I don't like the idea of, you know, them making fun of Star Trek. And I'm like, blah, blah, blah. You know, you and I, we both know that that's not what they're doing, that they're actually trying to have fun within the Star Trek universe. We went to the Las Vegas panel last year. They really convinced us that they're on the right track. They had a hilarious pitch, which is they're on board a starship that specializes in second contacts. You know, that's funny right there. I think what we need to consider, though, is like the curiosity factor. No matter all the haters, there's going to be that curiosity factor. They're going to tune in for that first episode. And if it's decent, I don't know, they might whine a little bit on Facebook, but they'll probably tune in for the second. I think this one will actually do okay. Like, I honestly think that you give Star Trek, you know, that 25-minute format, it'll be pithy, it'll be fun. I think you're going to draw a lot of audiences in. I don't think they have anything to worry about.
I think general audiences will really enjoy it. That is my prediction on that one. I am curious if, in terms of sort of what we tend to see, the visible online contingent, I wonder if we see a little bit of the blowback that we saw on, say, like Ephraim and Dot or The Trouble with Edward, like these kind of lighter, more comedic takes on Star Trek that people tend to be a little more put off by. But I do think general audiences will probably really dig Lower Decks.
How do you define general audience? Like, that's what I'm always curious about. Is the person who's subscribing to CBS All Access to watch Star Trek considered part of the general audience? Or are we just focused more on the vocal minorities that feel so strong about one thing, either positive or negative, that they take to social media to voice those concerns or thoughts? And again, take it from a guy who's been doing a Star Trek podcast 51 weeks a year for the last 6 years.
Right. I think we tend to focus more on the online contingent, just because they're noisier, right? Like, and they're the ones who are going to go to that effort to go online, write a review, give a rating, anything like that. And so that's kind of what we have to work with. But you are right. Like, if it's on CBS All Access or, you know, Crave here in Canada, what is a general audience, right? Like, I guess it's just the people who have those services for whatever reason who stumble across it. But I don't even know who those people are. Crave makes more sense here in Canada because it has a much wider diversity of programming in terms of what people might sign up for. But in terms of like CBS All Access, that one I don't really know as much about. Like, I don't know what the sort of the average person is signing up for it, you know, to watch.
Not to bore too many of our listeners, which, well, I'm talking, so I guess you're used to it. But we have Crave in Canada, which I believe has a much bigger market share of Canada than CBS All Access has in the United States. Pretty much everything that is not on Netflix or Amazon Prime, that's what's on Crave. And Crave also has a number of other licensing deals where they just have like a lot of shows that would be on Amazon USA. It's not on Amazon Canada. It's on Crave instead. And they have like the HBO stuff as well. That said, Canada still a population 1/10 the size of the United States. So I suspect the people that are subscribing to CBS All Access, which are going to be the largest contingent of fans, if they're doing that much, they're into Star Trek. They're going to watch this show. I just can't imagine, unless the show is just absolute dreck and we've been misled, I can't imagine people just actively disliking it and unleashing as much hate as we saw with, say, you know, Discovery. And for that, you know, Discovery was, a lot of the hate being unleashed on it was kind of venomous, toxic sort of stuff, you know?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. How toxic are you going to be about a 22-minute, you know, animated series?
I also think this show benefits from being, you know, the fourth season of Star Trek to come out since this CBS All Access thing launched.
True.
If this had been the first, I think people might have been a little more annoyed.
So one of the things you asked me, though, is if I thought Lower Decks is going to come out before Discovery. All yeah. signs point to yes, but what's the word on Star Trek Discovery right now, Cam?
Well, they're working on it as best and fast as they can.
They're in post-production at this point. Yep. Principal photography, it's all wrapped. I don't know if they have any pickup shots that they need to do. I suspect that they're good to go. They're in the editing process. They're doing VFX, sound design, what have you. I have every reason to believe that the show's in the can.
There was unconfirmed rumors that the problem was the scoring and that they couldn't get the orchestra together. So that was at least the rumors with COVID that they couldn't get their orchestra together to record their soundtrack. I don't know if that was true, but that was something that was going around for a few days at least.
Yeah, and I wonder if you could go to a, you know, a country. Okay, Cam, remember when we saw, you know, the traveling Star Trek orchestra in Vancouver?
Yeah.
A couple years ago, and they were all like, they were all Czech, like as in like the, you know, Czech Republic. They're all like Czech orchestra members, and it's because they work for cheap. I wonder if, and not that I want anybody to be unsafe or anything like that, but I just wonder if you go to a country like Czech Republic, which I believe is doing much better with COVID-19 than the United States is right now as well. I wonder if there's just opportunities to tap a resource like that, you know, to work their way out of the situation. I don't know. It's just very tough to say.
Yeah, and have Jeff Russo zoom in basically and talk to the you know, conductor there.
Oh, no, I mean, conductor. They just jam all, you know, just like freestyle jazz every single episode.
It all sounds like music from The Way to Eden.
Okay. Well, yeah, I would love it if there was like a Czech vocalist, like a hippie. He's just rocking out.
Like, hey, brother.
Yeah. Sorry. What were you going to say, sir?
No, I mean, it has been kind of weird, though, that we haven't, I don't know, you'd think they'd drop morsels here and there about Discovery, but they've been just radio silence, really. I mean, you know, we had some images quite a while back. We had a teaser quite a while back, but it just seems like, I mean, if this thing was going to launch relatively soon, I think we would have seen a little bit of an uptick in marketing.
Yeah.
And there's just been none. So that tells me that there's still uncertainty about when it's going to drop. I mean, maybe they're sure it's going to drop, you know, November or something, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be in the coming months by any stretch.
Well, do you think it's possible that they're dropping, I don't know, the first six episodes of Lower Decks, then they drop the next six episodes of Discovery after that, and both shows go into a bit of a hiatus, and then the remaining six episodes or seven episodes air, you know, after, you know, I don't know, New Year's or something like that?
Yeah, because they did that with the first season of Discovery, didn't they?
Yeah, they broke it in half. There's a bit of a hiatus, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just very tough to say, but other than that, I don't know. I'm very excited about Star Trek Discovery. More excited about Star Trek Discovery since before the premiere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think you and I both agree that they finally have their raison d'etre right now. The show knows what it's about. I'm intrigued by where they leave off all the characters and what that means for their interactions with each other. I'm anticipating it greatly at this point.
And also, they've evolved a lot of the characters to the point where they're just a lot more fun. Like the bridge crew, who would get little tiny moments throughout season one, got way more to do in season two. So I'm looking forward to see, you know, how they help fill out the show in season three. And, you know, we've got Nan there now as well. Like, there's some fun characters that we get to see do a little bit more in season three. I'm just excited to see this new unit. And I mean, I'm curious going forward how much they're going to be breaking up the crew season to season, or if they kind of stick with what they've got. I mean, Discovery, they always said, well, people can go at any time, but I hope we have gelled into a little bit of a unit we're going to stick with for a while.
Well, speaking of breaking up the crew, as long as they keep Ash and Burnham away from each other, I'll be a happy camper.
You know, they will always find a way to work Ash Tyler into Star Trek Discovery.
I don't care. I want him gone. He sucks.
You know there's going to be animated photographs of him doing things.
Does Ash Tyler get a 22nd century or 23rd century short trek?
Ooh.
Him being the new commander of Section 31 or something.
If he is going to be an actor on, in the main cast of Star Trek Section 31, yes, I think so, for sure.
But no, what if he's not,
If he's not.
What if he's not on Discovery this next season? What if this Star Trek 31 spinoff that doesn't really seem to have much enthusiasm around any quarters, what if that never really takes off?
Right.
Do you think they at least maybe want to close the loop on him just a little bit with maybe a short trek? Bring the actor back and give him 15 minutes.
And this is assuming he doesn't just show up on Strange New Worlds?
Yeah, perhaps.
Okay. I think they like the actor a lot. So I think he's going... I could totally see him getting his own short trek. Like, why not? I think they're going to find ways to work him in because obviously they like him. So,
Yeah. Jumping off that though, short treks, we haven't heard any news, but I don't think that actually means anything because I was thinking about it. It wasn't like they announced these short treks years in advance or anything like that. They just kind of sprung them on us and they said, hey, these are going to be premiering in 2 months or something like that. And we got with 4 of them, then 6 of them. Just the very fact that we haven't heard any updates about short treks, these things, they're kind of, I don't know, they're filming them in Toronto or Los Angeles, getting them out of the way, doing the post-production. It's all kind of covert. They don't need to announce it. So just the fact that we haven't heard any updates doesn't mean that we're not going to be getting them as more of the shows continue to premiere. I'm down. I would love to see more animated stuff. Ephraim and Dot, you and I both absolutely adored. Mm-hmm. There's been so many fun ones like The Escape Artist or The Trouble with Edward. I say keep doing it, keep adding more contents, bust out those, Blu-ray sales, who knows? Give me more content.
Yeah, the Blu-ray was really fun, and to hear the commentaries from Anson Mount talking about his helmet that he wore in Ask Not. Alex Kurtzman, he's pretty frank. He's like, the only reason these happened is because CBS wanted the next season of Discovery. We did not have it done, so we gave them short treks.
Nice. All
right. But no, I'm desperately hoping for more because they even talk on the Blu-ray about how it allows them to kind of do those episodic stories that, frankly, Discovery and Picard just haven't allowed. And we got to hop around, change tones, do weird things, bring in creators or writers who are not necessarily going to be people who would get hired to work on Discovery or Picard or what have you, but give them a short trek they do something interesting and weird with.
Yeah, that's what I loved so much about, Star Trek, watching it week to week back in the 90s. It's it could be anything any given week, whereas you watch Discovery and Picard and they're both very monolithic in their tone. And when there's dramatic shifts in tone, I think on an episode like Stardust City Rag, it's very, it's very jarring, So I think the short treks, we've been delighted by them. Some of them have been amazing. Some of them, a couple duds. None of them have not been at least interesting or given us a little bit of fodder for the podcast. These are 15 minutes long. We've done full episodes on every single one of them.
Totally. And I would love it if they continue to bring in interesting people. I loved that Michael Giacchino came in and directed one. And I can't remember the name of the guy, but the guy who did The Trouble with Edward. Did he work on Portlandia or something?
All I remember is that he's a Canadian screenwriter. He wrote for Silicon Valley. I know that. Okay. I'm blanking on the writer's name, though.
But he had comedic background just in other TV shows. He's not someone they're probably going to hand Picard season 2 to. But You give
I'd love
him...
it if they did.
Maybe it would be funny. But but then, you know, you get to hand him a short track. So do whatever you want. And he does some really weird things with it that would not fit the tone of a Star Trek series. And so I love that about it. I love that some of these short tracks felt like these really original, weird visions that, you know, you wouldn't normally get. And that's something the original series did have, and that you would suddenly hand episodes over to, like, Robert Block, who wrote Psycho. But you don't get that in really any of this new Star Trek. And that's what those short tracks should be for, I think. I would not like them to be kind of these weird, kind of lame prequels like we got for that Picard show with the one with the two girls having the fight. You know, like, that was, like, just almost a waste of my time. The only reason I'll say it isn't a waste of my time is because it gave us something to talk about on a podcast.
Is that the worst short trek yet?
I would say yes. I think so. I think I voted that it was the worst.
Yeah.
Because in the first season, I would say Runaway was the worst of the four. And I would say it is better than that one.
But at least with Runaway, it established some stuff character-wise with Tilly and Poe.
Yep.
There's a couple cool, like, VFX shots, you know, the shuttle bay, for instance. There's enough redeemable stuff that even though you and I were a little bored by it, I can appreciate it. Whereas the Children of Mars short track, it was just lame. It was very lame and uninspiring, and it felt like I was watching an after-school special made in 1987.
And incredibly derivative. Like, it just... everything about it. So yeah, and I mean I did kind of laugh that they didn't put that one on the Blu-ray set for the short treks.
They knew it was that bad.
I guess they just want to put it on the Picard Blu-ray set, but I'm like, I don't see why you can't double dip. I mean, I don't think anyone who loves Star Trek is going to not buy the Picard Blu-ray set because they already have the short trek.
I want to know the people boycotting the Short Trek Blu-ray because it does not feature Children of Mars.
It's just so weird. It's a weird decision because they threw Runaway and The Brightest Star on, you know, season two Discovery. So, like, what's the big deal? Throw it on the Short Treks and then throw it on season one Picard.
Well, I wonder if it comes down to, like, a, you know, maybe the Children of Mars Short Trek was financed with a Picard budget.
Mm.
Versus, you know, Q&A, that obviously looks like it jumped out of the Discovery world or something like that. So I wonder if it just comes to some of that tricky legalese or what have you.
Possibly.
Who knows? Maybe
they're saving that for volume two of Short Treks. That'll be one of the lead-off entries in that Blu-ray set. Who knows?
Yeah, that's a selling point. Well, I just mentioned Q&A. Let's talk about the potential for Star Trek Strange New Worlds, the most recently announced spinoff from this franchise with the lead of Anson Mount will be coming back as Captain Christopher Pike. We, of course, know that's Ethan Peck as Spock, Rebecca Romijn as number one. They're going to be back. You and I can't wait. They are going for more of that episodic tone, but I don't think that episodic format means that there won't be arcs. They said they want to focus very much on characters, which I dig, you know. Mm-hmm. I think very much about, like, when Angel season 4 had just concluded, it was the most serialized season of either Buffy or Angel, and WB came back and said, hey, can you guys make this, like, episodic? And Joss Whedon was just like, yeah, we'll do episodes, but we're going to have character arcs, character growth going throughout. And it was just funny because, like, by the last, I don't know, 7 or 8 episodes, it was all just serialized again. I suspect that this show is going to be more serialized than what they're leading on, but I don't think it's going to all hang on one overarching story like we got with the Red Angel, the Klingon War, the android planet / Borg cube stuff from Star Trek Picard.
Yeah, I mean, he has, Akiva Goldsman said it will be probably, he said... Executive producer Akiva Goldsman said it would be less serialized, I believe, than Deep Space Nine, he said. But to me, that could also just mean that they're going to do mini arcs, though. So, like, what happens if we get, you know, like, three-parters, that sort of thing, and a few of them.
I'm
that's
down.
That's totally cool with me. If they do a season that's broken up with, you know, a couple two-parters, a three-parter, maybe a four-parter in there, totally is fine with me. I am 100% okay with that. I just want the diversity of storytelling that, like, Picard did not give me, but I'm hoping Strange New Worlds will, where we can bounce around different places. We aren't tied to the same aliens throughout 10 episodes or 15 episodes or whatever it goes. I just want to do different things each time because I think that's way more fun and it gives us a lot more to talk about. I mean, you and I, when we're doing Picard and we're in like week 7, it's like, well, we don't have a whole lot more to say about the Borg cube at this point.
we keep saying that, yeah, we still don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, like we want to talk about, you know, full stories within these episodes. We want to, you know, tackle the beginning, middle, and end and see how it works on a storytelling level. And I that's what excites me so much.
And if they have, like, say, a one episode that deals with the Trill, then we get to talk on the podcast about the Trill and the evolution of the Trill and things like that. You know, it's, we aren't constantly tied to, these are our three things we're touching on all season.
One of the things that you and I have also addressed, though, is the fact that it looks as if there's going to be three white leads, and I don't know how good that looks if you're a progressive series like Star Trek, and that never has looked good. That's often, you know, you think about Enterprise or TNG or TOS or Voyager, all the triumvirates in those respective shows, they're all like white people, right?
Yeah.
I suspect, though, this will be more of an ensemble drama, more akin to Deep Space Nine, where, you know, you can have, like, one episode is focused on one specific character, and everyone else can kind of play backup to a certain degree. It's not uncommon. Like, they did that a lot on TNG, right? You know, like, or Voyager, especially. And, I even think about, part of the J.J. universe of Lost, Lindelof, who also wrote Star Trek Into Darkness, they kind of perfected that on Lost. Like, every episode is focused on one particular character. I love that. I think what you and I are drawn to so much in Star Trek is the character-based storytelling. And if things seem a little less jumbled because we're experiencing through one POV, I think that's actually good storytelling. We can look forward to that.
Yeah, what excites me the most about Strange New Worlds isn't the idea of 12 episodes about Pike or 12 episodes about Spock.
Yeah.
It's that tone that the Pike Enterprise sets. So let's just work with that and build new characters around that we care about. I am not going to care who we're bouncing around with, whichever character it is, so much as we have that tone. And we saw glimpses of that tone throughout Season 2 Discovery of what sort of atmosphere we get on a Pike run ship. That's what I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, I'm wondering, like, the whole idea of a strange new world. How often do you think we're going to be traveling to strange new worlds versus bottle episodes? Because I just think about, like, the promise of, say, Star Trek Discovery. I don't know. Like, we only went to, like, I don't know, one or two memorable planets. Picard, there's only, like, you know, maybe there's a couple planets of Picard that jump out. I just wish that there's more of that discovery of new civilizations, you know, interacting and try to reconcile our own preconceptions, our own biases with what other cultures see as just the norm.
Well, we got so spoiled on all the Berman era Star Trek, as well as the original series, and that every week you would go to a new location. You know, even if it was just, you know, in the case of the original series, like painted rocks in a different color with a different background, it still felt like a different world because it was surrounded with different inhabitants and a different culture. And I really do love that aspect of Star Trek, changing it up week to week. And obviously, when you have a serialized story like Picard or Discovery, it's not really going to work too well. But in Strange New Worlds, that's what I'm hoping to get back to. Like, that to me is what's exciting and what makes Star Trek so much fun. Because, you know, we'll see an episode of any of those series I named, and you'll be like, this one's really lame, or this one's really dorky. But the next week, maybe you get something super cool versus like 10 episodes where maybe it's polarizing and like half the audience is like, I'm not digging this for 10 episodes straight. You know, like, that's not cool.
No. I do hope that we get, like, a super dorky alien species here or there throughout Strange New Worlds. That'll be fun.
Well, I'm really hoping Strange New Worlds opens the doors to do a little more of that outlandish type of aliens that we saw in the original series. Like, TNG onwards played it a little more grounded in realism. You know, a lot of the bumpy-headed aliens and stuff like that, and a lot of Northern California settings. But I'm hoping we can get back to seeing strange things. You know, you look at some of the aliens that popped up, like, you know, random example, the Gamesters of Triskelion, it's like three brains in a jar. You know, like, things like that to me would be really fun. Or the Mugatu, you know, the giant, like, whatever it is, the giant creature hurling spears in the Galileo 7. Things like that. That, to me, is what I want to see on Strange New Worlds.
I want to see a prequel to Justice.
Just a lot of running.
Yeah. Kim, Star Trek Picard just wrapped up season one. We know for a fact they were supposed to start, you know, filming season two this month here. In June, at least, I should say. They're in the midst of writing scripts. Executive producer Akiva Goldsman says that he appreciates the time that they're able to go back and refine those scripts. We have a new showrunner coming in, taking over from Michael Chabon, who's going on to do his own CBS All Access series, Cavalier and Clay, but he's sticking around as an executive producer. You and I, we have very mixed feelings on Picard, and that I think there's a number of like cool moments, stuff that worked for us, but overall we're kind of deflated by where they decided to take this series. It just wasn't all that inspiring to us, and the 10-episode story wasn't that compelling.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have faith that they want to move beyond that, what they describe as a 10-hour movie sort of format?
No, I think they're going to stick with that.
I know. That depresses me.
Yeah. I mean, they've promised that, you know, the next season won't be covering the same ground. It'll have startling events. I don't even know what that means, really. I mean, I guess it's a little encouraging in the sense if they say it's not covering the same ground, maybe it's a whole new adventure. Like, we're not just going to, you know, piggyback off what we were doing in the previous season and just, I don't know, explore androids for another 10 episodes or something, or the Romulan stuff. Maybe we get to go in a different direction and do something new. That's fine with me. But if we stick to this, you know, monolithic tone and just kind of play it the way we did last season, like, I don't know that that's that exciting to me at the moment.
Yeah. It's just so tough if your big 10-hour story isn't all that compelling. But the thing is that we were drawn into, I think there's enough interesting characters on their roster that'll get more time. You and I, we liked Rios and Raffi, and I think Girardi has a lot more potential still. It looks as if Seven of Nine is going to be sticking around too, which I'm intrigued by. I just wish that they give her way better material. I don't ever need to see Soji or Elnor or Narek ever again. I don't care about those characters at all.
Right. Yeah. And it's funny to me though, you know, when this show was coming around, they're like, this is not TNG, guys. This is not TNG. But, you know, they've started teasing, you know, Whoopi Goldberg being on the next season and LeVar Burton. And, you know, I know Jonathan Frakes has kind of teased he'd love to come back as Riker. And I'm like, at what point is this just a TNG reunion?
I know. Well, and you know, the other problem is like the best episode was Nepenthe, which was just a big TNG reunion.
Yes. And I mean, Akiva Goldsman says this next season will be more of an exploration of Starfleet. And I'm like, okay, so...
Well, I read that quote, though.
Yeah.
I think like there's headlines going around. If you really look at his quote, I think he just says like, yeah, we didn't really do anything with Starfleet last year except for that fleet that showed up.
Yeah.
I just think he means that it'll get a bit more of an appearance than what we initially saw.
Right. Know? But it does just make me go like, okay, this Picard show that was this very specific, unique vision of a show is quickly folding in TNG cast members and, you know, now promising fans. Like, I'm not saying that it is going to be a Starfleet show. That's not what I'm saying. But the fact that they're just teasing that out there for fans, don't worry, more Starfleet. It's like, okay, like, you're basically trying to promise what people demanded in the first place, that you were like, no, that is not what we are doing, people. We're going in a whole new direction.
But does that mean that they recognize how they didn't really nail what they were going for with this ragtag crew sort of thing? They're not going to get rid of La Serena, the the ship or anything like that.
Nor should they.
Yeah, you know, but I just wonder if I just want them to have more fun on the show.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, they tried to do that with Stardust City Rag, and we both agree that's the worst, far and away the worst episode of the season. So
yeah. And what do you make of the sort of buzz that Brent Spiner may have a more significant role going forward?
Well, again, if you read the quote, it's just, it's like, yeah, it'd be great to bring him back. You know, yeah. So it's like, I don't read as much into that. I just, if they bring back Noonien Soong's lost son that he never spoke of once more, I'm okay. You know, sure. I thought Brent Spiner was exceptional in Picard season.
Yeah, he was good. I enjoyed him a lot.
Yeah, like, I have no complaints.
Once again, I'm not complaining about Brent Spiner coming back and playing this character. I have no issues with that whatsoever. It's more just, again, these are the things they keep putting out.
Yeah, like, but you know what? The thing is, I think they keep putting out because they realize that was the stuff that worked well for them. Is it derivative? Well, I don't know. Did you find any of the Troi stuff derivative or the Riker stuff? We're seeing these familiar characters in unfamiliar situations. And I think that was also why we were kind of drawn into those particular moments, especially with the Data stuff from the finale. Think about episode one. This is what really kind of, was the trap that they laid for us in that Remembrance, I think, was a solid premiere. Mm-hmm. Picard was in a whole new situation we've never seen him in. It was intriguing for us as fans to see him in that. And I think because of the strength of that episode, you and I were hanging on for a while, even though we were quickly deflated by episode two, but we were going with it for a while. And I think when we realized, like, I don't know, we were just kind of more disappointed in the series than maybe we should have been just because of the hope and promise that we saw with episode one.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, I would have preferred they just went for a wild swing that went wrong. You know, like, it was a show that I just couldn't even get angry about. I was just like, yeah, it was what it was.
You know? I know.
That's the thing. Like, had they made choices that I hated, at least I could say, like, well, I mean, like, they went for it. Like, they really went for it, and it didn't work for me, but I can't disagree that they were, you know, brave in these choices.
Don't you think it was, for me, it seems as if they were being simultaneously too precious about Picard, as well as too irreverent about what makes Star Trek great by trying to make it so violent and adult oriented.
It was a weird thing to do. I still don't understand what happened with that season. As you know, we've reiterated before, they said that the initial pitch that got Patrick Stewart so excited, they didn't use really any of in that season. And it just seemed, yeah, like they wanted to almost, like, it's weird because I don't consider Picard on TNG like a kid's character, but a lot of this with Picard became, this is the mature Star Trek. This is the mature Star Trek. And I don't know. I think TNG is a pretty mature show, quite honestly.
I agree. Yeah.
And so it became a lot of this, we're mature, which they took more to mean violent. Violent in a lot of F-bombs. And I'm like,
our characters do drugs.
Yeah. And okay. I don't really see that as mature.
No. It's more like, you know, some, you know, I keep thinking about, you know, like the 20-year-old ad executive that comes in and he's like, this ain't your daddy's Star Trek, guys. And he's just like, splickety splash. And like, you know, it's just like, oh, like, you just don't get it. And I think the show suffered gravely from too many cooks in the kitchen when you just count the number of executive producers like listed there. There are like, what, four co-creators?
Yeah.
Of the show, like Patrick Stewart is an executive producer. Mm-hmm. It just, what a mess. The show is just a mess. And I think what they need is a strong sort of auteur spirit. That's what we get from the best shows on TV right now, is that auteur vision, even though we discussed it recently, you know, television is very much kind of a collaborative effort, but this collaboration just did not work.
Yeah, I mean, and to be fair, Discovery had the same problems in season one for them. And I think theirs were even more tumultuous, really,
than
what was going on with Picard. So I just hope Picard season two works better for me.
All right. Well, Cam, why don't we jump over to the movie franchise? I think we've got two things to debate. You know, we've got Noah Hawley, the creator of shows like Fargo and Legion, or the adaptation, the TV adaptation of Fargo. He's got one pitch going. We also heard about the Tarantino pitch. It seems to me that the Noah Hawley pitch has much more traction right now, but no updates in months about that. But I don't think Tarantino is going to direct this movie where he has a story by credit. I just don't know how they throw away his script, just considering how easy that would be to market.
I guess. It just doesn't seem like there's a lot of urgency to get Star Trek going other than this Noah Hawley project.
It just baffles me, though, because you have the CBS Viacom merger. It's now, what was it officially called? Viacom CBS. In these situations, you've got all this capital pouring in to finance more, you know, content. Like this is exactly the moment that you would get this. If you've got a script in the can with Tarantino's name on it, even if he doesn't want to direct it, you still make that movie happen at this point. You've got the money, you've got the dough. That's the entire point of doing a merger like this. It baffles me. It really doesn't seem to be going anywhere at this point. I wonder, do you think the pandemic has slowed talk of the Noah Hawley thing down? There's just really no updates to get at while he maybe revises his script?
Well, I mean, the Noah Hawley one, yeah. I think the pandemic has quieted things down in Hollywood just in general. The Tarantino is interesting in that, you know, it was just a story credit for Tarantino. He didn't write it. So it's like, who knows? Maybe the script stunk. Maybe they looked at, because it was from the writer of The Revenant. Maybe they read it and were like, no. Like, who knows, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's the thing. Yeah. It just kind of petered out. We never heard Tarantino at a certain point was like, I'm taking like 4 years off or whatever, as Tarantino does. You know, he's like, I got a lot going on. You know, I got stuff I want to do. So it's like, if you don't have him kind of in the trenches with you, maybe as a producer or something, maybe they were just like, okay, well, like, we have this script from the guy who did The Revenant that maybe we don't like that much, and we don't have Tarantino to rewrite it, and he doesn't seem interested in rewriting at this point or doing any work at the moment. Maybe that was the issue. It's just one of those projects that, like, got a ton of heat and then just went quiet.
But that, like, even think about, like, when Star Trek Beyond was coming out in 2015, and before it even came out, Paramount was like, we've already given the green light to the sequel featuring Chris Hemsworth.
Yeah.
That fizzled out very quickly, you know, after Beyond kind of underperformed. I don't know, that movie studio, is there a bigger joke of a movie studio, though?
Not really. It made me laugh so hard, though, when J.J. Abrams was on the red carpet for Star Trek Beyond, hyping that fourth Star Trek movie, saying, it's the best Star Trek script I've ever seen. And it's like, guy, you're hyping your third movie.
Yeah.
Like, why don't you say that's the best Star Trek script you've ever seen? Worry about the fourth one in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah. It genuinely depresses me that it's been 11 years of the Kelvinverse and we've gotten 3 movies. Whereas we think after 12 years of TOS in the movies, we got 6 movies. Like, isn't that just stupid?
Yeah, it's just, I mean, different attitudes at the time. Those Star Trek movies were solid earners that they kept cutting the budgets on, so they really made money. And they just cranked them out every 2 years. That was just the philosophy of, like, they'll always make money off those. And they were cheaper. I think that's part of it. I think the Kelvinverse movies got expensive to the point where Beyond, you know, it did fine, it broke even, what have you. But, like, when you're spending that much money, I guess you have less incentive to really charge forward versus, like, whatever they were paying for some of those latter TOS movies or even the TNG movies, which are pretty cheap.
The problem is there's just no market for a $50 million budgeted movie anymore. Like, they just don't make those movies, which is unfortunate. You look at the budget of, like, Discovery. Mm-hmm. I bet in the course of that one of one season, they're probably dropping like $80 million, you know, like, if not more. So what do they want to do? Like, amortize those costs over knowing that there will be like all this content that'll be available in their libraries, you know, extensive contents for streaming services. Versus, you know, 2 hours that will cost them the same amount that, you know, 13 hours would.
Well, yeah. And I am also curious with Noah Hawley's Star Trek. He said he doesn't plan on using the Kelvinverse characters, it seems.
That bums me out.
It does. It's such a kind of a limp ending to the Kelvinverse, or to the characters, I should say. But that makes me also go, well, okay, so Noah Hawley's making the Star Trek movie. How much do they want to spend on it? And are we potentially looking at this being a streaming movie?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I think that's the probably the best thing to do with this franchise. I think that, you know what, even if this first pass at Tarantino's story idea wasn't the best, as you speculate, maybe they can give it another pass, and that's going to be an easy thing to promote. People are just going to tune in for the curiosity factor of a Tarantino take on Star Trek.
If people will tune in for a 4-hour cut of Justice League, they'll tune in for Tarantino Star Trek.
But it all makes sense for like the new reality of streaming content. Like, I think maybe the future films just really rests on these streaming services now, which I have no qualms about. I'd love to see them eventually in theaters, but have at it, guys.
And even if they make the Noah Hawley Star Trek for less money, say they do it for $80 million, the advertising is so expensive on top of that, that it's like, well, we're right back where we started. You know, we have to earn X amount of dollars. So like, that's why the streaming thing makes more sense, especially because of the fact he doesn't want to use the Kelvinverse characters. That's the most marketable aspect. So are you telling me that he's going to have a new Star Trek movie with a whole new cast that they're going to put in theaters that could potentially be really expensive? Like, I don't know. Like, no. I think especially after this pandemic, Hollywood is going to be in a very shaky place in terms of the projects they're going to put into theaters. I think you're going to see a lot of sure things winding up in theaters, as if we didn't already, but even more so, I think.
So more John Carter of Mars coming soon?
The trilogy will be complete.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, yeah,
to quote our favorite character from Star Trek Picard, hell yeah.
But I think you're going to see a lot of like Blumhouse style horror movies that are about $1 million, you know, $2 million. And then otherwise, a lot of Marvel movies, a lot of franchise stuff, because they're going to be desperate to get people back into theaters. And I just don't think they're going to be taking a lot of risks for a while.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. All right, sir. Jumping over to the next topic, though. The state of conventions. Star Trek conventions, that is. You and I, we go to Las Vegas every single year for the largest Star Trek convention in the world. It always happens the first week of August. That is not the case this year. It's been postponed to December. Mm-hmm. Does this happen, Cam? Does this December Star Trek convention happen? You and I, we plan to go. We would love to go.
Uh-huh. Well, if things are safe, I should say.
Okay, so I was doing a little bit of math here. I was looking up numbers, verified numbers. You and I, we might be in a bit of a bubble. You and I, with regards to our concerns about the safety. We live in a jurisdiction, the province of British Columbia here in Canada, where we have had 2,800 cases of COVID-19 out of a population of 5 million people. Mm-hmm. That's 56 cases per 100,000.
Yeah.
Go to Nevada. That has 480 cases per 100,000 people. That's almost 10 times the amount there. That seems, I'm frightened to go to the grocery store right now. Yeah. I can't imagine going to a hotel, casino, convention center sort of situation if things haven't remarkably improved by December. I just don't see any signs coming from the United States that they're on their way to improving things at all. I think all we can do is hope for a vaccine or a therapy that would make us safe. Like, I don't see any way around it.
Yeah, and I got an email today from Caesars. You know, the convention has moved to the new convention center right by the Harrah's Resort. We'll get to that in a second. But I got an email from Caesars today. You know, that, you know, now Vegas and Caesars establishments are masks, you know, across the board, staff and visitors. And so then I start to think today, I'm like, boy, how do I feel about a 5-day Star Trek convention in a mask all day?
Doesn't sound great. Okay, That's every single cosplayer.
That is an excellent point, actually. But I am not a cosplayer, so to me that sounds uncomfortable.
Okay. I just want you to show up in that mask that Data wore in the episode Masks. And so it's not covering your mouth. It's only covering your eyes. You just walk around like right. That.
Yeah, there's a lot of people have done that, worn the Domino masks out.
Yeah, like that. But you're right, though. That seems miserable to me. Like having a face mask on for, you know, 5 days straight.
And those are long days, too.
Yeah. Like I'm uncomfortable enough doing my groceries, you know, wearing the mask. So it's like, no, thank you, you know, but, you know, look, if we have the best and brightest of humanity right now working as hard as they can on a vaccine, then I think there's hope. I don't think all is lost at this point. It's just, I don't feel safe right now attending a Star Trek convention. And you and I agree, we look forward to this more than anything else all year long. Like, this is a blast for us. We get to go do live panels and geek out in front of like a couple hundred people about Star Trek, you know, like that's what I love.
For sure. I mean, I will miss not getting to do a panel this year. I love, as you know, attending all the panels, seeing all the stars, doing photo ops, all that stuff. And of course, hanging out with our friends from across the world. It's what I look forward to, you know, every single year. And it's been a part of my life now for, well, this would be year 9, I guess. And it's going to be a real bummer not to do it this summer. And my fingers are crossed, but in the back of my head, I'm like, I really don't expect to go. Like, I just don't expect this to be a reality. But, you know, we should say the convention has moved to a new location. It used to be at the Rio for several years now. It was at the Hilton before that, but it's been at the Rio as long as I've been going. And this is the first time it's going to be in a new venue, at least for me.
I'm absolutely delighted by this. If we can be candid here, the Rio is a dump. It really is. Like, yeah. But it's our dump, if you know what I'm saying. The place just has not been renovated extensively in years. Like, there's some okay spots to go hang out. We don't mind it. The convention area is very spacious. It's worked well for the Star Trek scene. The eating establishment's kind of limited, though. Our rooms definitely get dumpier and dumpier every year that we've gone. Mm-hmm. Moving into Hera's, which just went through some, based on the photos and videos I've been looking at, that went through some very nice renovations, I'd be excited to go there. But it's also the convention center, it's at Caesar's Forum, not to be mistaken for Caesar's Palace, which are not that close together. But it's also equidistant from the Link Hotel, which is also owned by Caesar's. So, I don't know, we could try Harris this year if it happens, if we don't like it. The Link is supposed to be very nice, and prices would be comparable. So I'm just excited by the potential for staying at much, much nicer venues and just seeing what the atmosphere is going to be like for the fans, because there's all these the go-to hangout spots in the evenings, whether it's the Masquerade Bar or the O Bar at Rio. I'm wondering what the next hangout spots are going to be. We were speculating in one of our WhatsApp groups that maybe the Piano Bar at Hera's would be the next go-to spot, because it seems to be the biggest bar there. I don't know. It's that sort of stuff that I like geeking out about, but for me, it still kind of seems like fantasy time, because I just don't know about the probability of us going to Vegas in December.
Yeah. I mean, my one concern is that when everyone was at the Rio turned into like the Star Trek hotel. And I am a little concerned that, you know, dividing it between Hera's, the Link, having the venue separate from the hotel, and then also having Hera's and the Link be really big hotspots just on the strip for people coming in, that will kind of dilute that Star Trek geekdom that just took over the hotel. But, you know, until I experience it, I can't really complain either way.
I think, you know, like, the convention is adjacent. The convention center is adjacent to the hotel, both hotels, the Link and Hera's. Mm-hmm. So I know what you're saying. It's not going to be as congregated together as it was before the Rio, but I think people still want to have that communal experience. People will naturally congregate towards each other no matter what.
That's true. And hopefully that there's better audio in the panel rooms, because I know that there was, we had some issues 1 year, and I know some other people did too, just based on sort of the layout of the rooms. So hopefully the new convention center is a little better for some of the smaller stages.
Yeah, I would love it if we could actually discern what people are singing during karaoke night versus like...
Right. Yeah. Yeah, well, exactly. Yeah, if you're sitting off to the far left, far right in that small ballroom, good luck, you know. And that was always frustrating. So, yeah, hopefully this new state-of-the-art facility does offer better in terms of not just that, but also like visuals, you know, like the screens that people are looking at, you know, who are sitting further back, which we would have been this year or will be this year in December if we go, because we're going to take general admission. So hopefully it's just better audio-visual for the entire experience as well, with just newer technology.
Yeah, if not this year, then I'm looking forward to experience it next year. But it is just such a bummer that, like, you know, my go-to vacation is kind of canceled. Well, potentially canceled at this point.
Although, to be fair, I think everyone's is.
Yeah, that's true. Not a lot of, I don't know, unless you really want to do a staycation.
That's what I'm doing.
but that's just it. It's like, okay, staycation, and then do what? Like, you can't really go to local restaurants or, you know, go to like live concerts or, so it's just like, what I've been doing, I've just been like bicycling like around Vancouver as much as I can, which has been nice. But I'm quite familiar with all of the bike lanes and the bike trails that already exist. And so I'm just re-familiarizing myself, so.
Yeah, well, I'll have to stay busy somehow, some sort of projects or something. That'll be, I think, what I'll be working on, because,
let's,
yeah.
Let's do Subspace 5 times a week.
Hey, I got the time. Okay, so I think on that note, our assignment is complete. If you enjoyed listening to this podcast, we want to hear from you. Jump on over to the Facebook page at facebook.com/subspacepod. Tyler, what are we doing next time?
Cam, we're going to be talking about how to reunite the casts amid the COVID-19 pandemic. I know it sounds a little weird, a little funny, but I don't know. We've had all these other shows doing like table read episodes over Zoom or Skype. I think we could have a little fun with figuring out how exactly we're going to bring all these great actors together once again for a table read.
Awesome. Okay. And you can also find us on the Twitter. I'm at Cam V as in Vine Fiend Smith.
And you can find me at Reportin. That's REPORT. T as in TikTok. ON.
Okay. So until next time, the arena is closed.
Transfer complete.